The Data Reaper podcast is a companion which provides extra insight into the weekly report found at viciousyndicate.com. Join us for a deeper dive into the numbers to help you improve your Hearthstone game.
Hello and welcome to episode 83 of the Data Reaper podcast. I'm your host, Ridiculous Hat, and I am joined by the Daylight Saver himself, Zacho. Zach, how you doing?
How you doing, Hat?
I slept more than you did. How was your lost hour?
Seems fine. I mean, it's a good thing that we moved to daylight because recording at 2 a.m. for you is not that great.
I was awake.
If you don't know this, listeners, Hat's sleep schedule is an absolute mess.
Schedule is a strong word.
Yeah. It's not like recording these podcasts are disrupting something in any way. Everything is already totally obliterated.
If I had my way, I would sleep from 4 a.m. to noon every day. Unfortunately, I do have the day job, so I just accept being tired on Fridays and Mondays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays, Thursdays to get to catch up on sleep, which is why I can stay up until, well, start recording at 1 a.m. Eastern, and so we finish usually around 3. And last week it was 2 to 4, but I had Friday off, so it was fine. Because I was in daylight time and you were not. We tried recording in the morning when we first started doing this, and I am very much not a morning person.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to, I would happily record in a different time, but
this is the best one. This is the best one.
This is the best one, yeah.
So, you know what else is the best, listener, is that you are. Thank you so much for your support, as always. Want to let you know that our next report, there will be a report next week on the 31st. It is the last one of Fractured and Alterac Valley. And then after that, we take a little bit of time off. Zach hopefully gets some time to work on some preview content. We'll see what happens there, and then the expansion comes out shortly after. It's less than 2 weeks from the next report. So, you'll get the podcast. Should be normal time next week. On Saturday the 2nd, and then after that we'll figure out what we want to do for any in-between content on the podcast feed. And today we're just going to talk about a pile of new cards.
Yeah, now related to the report, there's some cool stuff you should check out. Okani is nuts in a lot of decks, and people are not playing it as much as they could or they should. Boar Priest is somewhat competitive at higher levels. It's a difficult deck to play, but it's around like the tier 3. It's pretty respectable at these levels, so try it out. I've played it. I have a positive win rate with it. It's surprisingly effective, and it's fun. And I got to... nobody's letting me do the achievement, though. That's the problem. That achievement really needs to be reworked. They always concede before you get it.
Yeah, it's... I always try and let people hit me with it. Like, I just end the turn and tab out and whatever.
I let someone hit me, but it happened against me once, like, one person. But I don't know. It's not super common yet, but I'll let people do the achievement. But yeah, it's cool. Live to one. Let's go.
Yes.
So, that is that. And there have been a lot of new cards. Now, obviously, we're not going to go over every card by card, because it's going to take us 5 hours or something. We're gonna look at class by class and highlight some things that we've noticed about the set so far that are cool or interesting to talk about.
Yeah, we'll start with Demon Hunter. And Demon Hunter has some cool cards that we've seen already. They gave Demon Hunter Flame Waker, which is pretty rad.
Is it Flame Waker? Honestly, it feels like a hybrid of Flame Waker and Altruis in a way.
Two pretty good cards to draw inspiration from.
How do you pronounce her name? Stheno?
I've been saying Stheno. Stheno, yeah.
Stheno?
I think you say the S, but I don't think it's Sutheno. I've been saying Stheno, but it's kind of hard to pronounce.
Yeah, I don't know. They're Nagas. They talk like that.
Snake stuff, you know.
Yeah, snaky stuff. Water snaky stuff. She's obviously the most interesting card in the Demon Hunter set. And like 3 mana 2/4 immune while attacking. After you cast a spell, attack the lowest health enemy. This can go face, which makes me think, okay, this is an extremely versatile card. You can use it to just AoE the board, right? In combination with a few spells, you can just clean up the board. Or if the board is clear, you can direct a lot of damage to face with this card. I'm thinking if this card was available today, Fel Demon Hunter would absolutely play it because of its massive damage potential. Like the versatility makes it hard for me to envision this card not seeing play in some capacity. The question is, what kind of play is it going to see? Is it going to be a solid all-around card? You know, something like a pseudo AoE and some face damage? Or is it going to be the centerpiece of some OTK that you might be able to do with it? I can also see that happening. Maybe you manipulate the stats. People have like floated some crazy ideas, like playing Reflecto to flip the attack to 4 and then OTK the opponent or stuff like that, or buff it in hand in some other way.
So, Zach, all right. So, hear me out. Turn 9, Ysera. Turn 10, this Nightmare Awakens.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Yeah, there's all sorts of things you can do with this card. I think it has a lot of potential and definitely the one to watch out for in the Demon Hunter set. Other than that, Multi-Strike, I think, is a fantastic card. The more I think about it, the more insane it seems to me because, you know, you're running things like Aldrakhi Warblades, right? You can attack twice with a lifesteal.
If that comes back.
I think it will. I see no reason why it doesn't stay in the core set, but it just stacks well with weapons. It stacks incredibly well with Jace and with your other attack modifiers. So I think, and just solid turn one, right? Answers Trog, right? The Trog duplicates, but you can kill both of them with it. So I think it's going to see some use. I'm pretty confident about these two cards. The other three cards I'm less confident about, even though the Colossal is good. We have a sad Best in Shell version of Demon Hunter, and the Rush Minion, the 4 mana 5/4, is really, it seems pretty bad to me.
So the thing the Rush Minion creates is a 5/3 charge after it attacks, deal 5 to an enemy minion. If you can find a way to consistently get that, that's a powerful card. I'm surprised that you're not more excited about Coilscar Commander. I know it's kind of weird in Demon Hunter, but this is a little spreading plaguey. 3 2/6s for 6 mana, if you can meet the condition of casting 3 spells while you're holding it. It's a big condition, but 3 2/6 taunts for 6 mana is a big deal.
Best in Shell hat. Just compare this to Best in Shell. In
that's
a class
2 2/7s. This is 3 2/6s. It's, you know, it's an extra body.
Yeah, but you can trade it. If you don't need it, this card just stuck in your hand and you know, ruins all your outcasts. It's a 6 mana card in Demon Hunter. How often do we play 6 mana cards in Demon Hunter? What do they need to do? What do they need to accomplish?
I don't know what a post-Skull world looks like. Like, getting out of the way of outcasts seems a lot less important because I don't know what we're outcasting anymore. It was always making way for Skull, and we won't do that anymore. So
Skull or Glide, that is true. We don't do that anymore, but
if I want to slow the game down and I can meet this condition, this is a very good way to do that. I don't know if I want to. I don't know what I'm going towards. But in Fel DH or something, I mean, you're already pretty good against minions, but this really slows things down for anything minion-based.
I really am not feeling it in Fel DH. I don't know. I think that these cards that the Naga cards that require 3 spells while holding are going to end up looking weaker than they currently are, maybe, because it's a tricky condition. Like, top decking this is awful. Like, think about top decking this.
Yeah.
It's just so bad. And having it early is not even that good, so I don't like it.
We need some kind of, like, twin slice or twin spell-esque thing. Like, it's something along those lines that's a couple spells packaged together. If we have something like that, then I'm a lot more excited about these.
I'm still not. I just think that cards that require resources to be fueled while they're in hand just seem like need to be really, really, really good. Game changing. Yeah. I think to see play, and this is not game changing for me. I don't think It's not great.
I can see it. And I think the condition as a whole of holding three spells is asking a lot. And it's kind of like you have to corrupt the card more than once. And that's a big ask. You're not limited by mana cost the same way, but you're limited by resources as well as having a card in hand that you know you're not going to play, needing it to be there anyways. It's just, it's a lot. So there's only a few of those, maybe only one of them I can think of off the top of my head that we actually would play anyways because it draws three cards. And so you spend the spells and you get them back, and it's a cheap card, so you can play it earlier.
Yeah, yeah. I just think this is way too expensive and clunky for Demon Hunter.
Okay.
Or any class. I wouldn't even play this in Druid. That's what I'm saying. Best in Shell is just better. Mm.
Speaking of Druid.
Okay. So, yeah. So, Druid, you know, we talked about Kalak Shell. That's cool. I think it's a really good card. Hedra, again, is like pseudo win condition. But again, she needs to be in hand in order for you to fuel it, and you kind of want to play expensive spells mostly in order to get the most out of her.
For anyone that hasn't seen Hedra, it's a 4/5 legendary that is for 7 mana. For each spell you've cast while holding this, you summon a minion of that spell's cost. So this is maybe the most extreme version of the problem we talked about with Coilscar Commander, is that you need this early enough for it to be relevant, really horrendous top deck again, but also you need it to be in hand and know you're not going to play it while you're playing other big-ish spells. Scale helps a lot here, but you have to have it, what, turn 5 at the earliest, and then just load it up and then hope that it's enough? It's asking a lot from you.
I mean, it's a 7 mana 4/5, so how much stats do we need to put, like, summon in order to for this to be worth it? Not too much, right? If you summon, if you play like a 5 mana spell and a 7 mana spell, it's already decent. But again, I don't know, maybe I'm fixating on drawing this, but it just seems like a card that I'm upset drawing, right? At some point where I need to find a way to survive or find a way to win, and I draw this off the top, and now I have this, okay, I need to do other stuff. It just seems kind of that maybe in practice it's gonna be different, but I'm not too excited about most of the Naga cards. But maybe I'm wrong. We'll see the whole set and figure it out.
I like cards like the Stheno is probably the one that I'm most excited about because it doesn't care what kind of spell you cast. It does the same thing. It is cheap and it doesn't matter when it's in your hand.
Yeah. Miracle Growth, I think, is a good card. Druid loses a lot of draw.
Yeah. This is the 7 mana nature spell. It draws 3 cards, and then you make a taunt with stats equal to your hand size.
Yeah, after you draw, right? So,
correct.
So this could be... this kind of reminds me of, like, Abyssal Summoner for Warlock, but this is way better than Abyssal Summoner because it draws cards. Like, you don't need to preemptively fill your hand to do this. Your hand can be mid-size and you play this and you're going to get a taunt. You're going to stabilize. It's like an Ancient of Lore, but a lot better because it has taunts, draws 3 cards. It seems pretty good. And Flipper Friends is also a card that seems versatile. I mean, 6/6 taunts is okay. The rushes are, I think, a little bit better. If you're running a token strategy, you'll be interested in Flipper Friends. And then we have the Mark of the Lotus kind of replacement. I guess it's a hybrid of Mark of the Lotus and Smuggler's Run, the Paladin card. You play Smuggler's Run for 1 mana and you shuffle the second version, which is kind of a mini survival of the fittest. And you can pull it with aquatic
form. It goes straight to the bottom. You know where it is.
Yeah, it goes straight to the bottom and you can pull it with aquatic form, which is kind of cute. I don't know how viable that's going to be, but
you're kind of building your own big in there, right?
Yeah. Seems like Druid is getting a lot of 7 mana stuff now that Overgrowth is rotating. Like we have 3 7 mana cards in this set so far revealed for Druid. I just, like, the whole class is rotating. I'm just wondering if we're going to get some cards for other mana slots because this class is going to need a lot of help. Hunter, we barely saw anything. But we did get a card that a lot of people got triggered by. I don't know why.
It's Raj Najjan, also known as Face Naga. 2 mana, 2/3 legendary Naga. After you cast a spell, deal damage equal to its cost to the enemy hero.
People seem to think that this card is really good in Questline Hunter.
I don't think it even makes that deck.
Here's the thing about Questline Hunter. If you're not a card that progresses the quest, then you suffer a big penalty in terms of performance. So this card doesn't progress your quest. This card does what the quest already does, which is deal damage to the opponent. If you're spending mana playing this and you're not progressing the quest and you're slowing down your quest progression, yes, you can deal a bunch of damage with it, but the most important thing in the deck is to complete the quest first and play the Tavish, which is much better than this card, right? This card can be worth damage, like maybe Face Hunter plays it, and, you know, it's a threat, it needs to be cleared, you can get more reach out of it. I'm not saying it's a bad card, but there are people, like, I'm seeing, like, wild players losing their minds over this card making Questline Hunter even more broken or something. I don't think so.
I want to just put Ramming Mount on this. I want to play this on 2 and Ramming Mount on 3, and that means I have to hope it lives, but I think it's much better in Face Hunter. In Quest Hunter, I don't think it makes the cut at all.
I mean, maybe, but it's, like, really fringe. If this goes in Questline Hunter, I think it's going to be, like, the 30th card. Honestly, people are overreacting about this card's power. It's a decent card, but it's not going to break Quest Hunter.
Yeah. I think I'm more likely to put Queen Ajara as the Naga in my Quest Hunter than I am to put this card in.
And I'm still not too keen on that. That seems pretty clunky to me. Mage. Mage got some decent. We talked about, like, the Spider Tank. I'm not feeling it. Spell Coiler, okay, cute. But really the card that I think is the most interesting one is Mecha Shark.
3 mana, 4/3 mech. After you summon a mech, deal 3 damage randomly split among all enemies. So you kind of, it's a repeatable Goblin Blast Mage sort of thing.
I mean, this is Flamebreaker for mechs. Yes. The way to think about it. Deal 3 rather than 2. This card could be nuts. This, like, if Mech Mage is viable, it's going to be because of this card. And whether or not Mech Warper is in the core set, that is an open question that I'm very interested in. If Mech Warper is in the core set, then Mecha Shark has that much more potential to make, like, an aggressive mage deck that can really flood the board and just use Mecha Shark to obliterate the opponent. I think that kind of direction could be good. If Mech Warper is not in core, then Mecha Shark is a good card, but not insane, right? I think a lot of it depends on whether Mech Warper is in core set. Gifts of Ajara is pretty decent, though you can't play this on 2, realistically.
Yeah, it's 2 mana arcane draw card, and then if you played a Naga while holding this, do it again. It's if you meet the condition, it's obviously a very good card.
Yeah, I mean, it's still not as good as, like, Fungal Fortune's pre-nerf, but it's okay. It's decent reload. If you're playing a bunch of Nagas, you're going to activate this. You don't need, the thing about this, since it's card draw, you don't need to play this early, right? You're meant to play other stuff and then reload with this. So I think the condition of playing a Naga while this is in your hand isn't that hard to accomplish. It's not that bad. You just need to play one Naga. You don't need to fuel it crazy with multiple cards. I think this card is playable, but not amazing, right? Because you can't play this on 2. Like, cycling a card for 2 mana is not good. Commander Sivara is kind of reload. I think it's better than other. I think it's on the stronger end of Naga card just because it gives you card advantage, right? This sits in your hand, you play a bunch of spells,
Well, Mage is good at that stuff, right? If you cast three spells while you're holding this, the battle cries to add it back into your hand. So, like, first flame, second flame coming back, you already kind of know that's going to be valuable, just as an example, and also sets it up pretty easily for you to figure out a third card to get back.
Yeah. So, I think this card's okay. This is one of the better ones. But that's kind of Mage. We talked about the mech. The big colossal mech was kind of cool. Paladin. Paladin seems to be getting a lot of mech-related stuff as well.
It's getting a lot of interesting stuff. Like, there's this mech thing and this holy thing. There's kind of two different clear directions that it's going.
The highlight for me in the Paladin set is Radar Detector. Two-mana spell. Scan the bottom five cards of your deck. Draw any mechs found this way. Then shuffle your deck.
This card's really amazing strong.
In a mech paladin. Think about it. Like, let's say even if your deck is like 60% mechs, let's say you're playing mech paladin, a dedicated mech paladin deck, and 60% of your deck is mechs. This is 2 mana draw 3. Sometimes it can be 2 mana draw more than 3. If it's 2 mana draw 3, it's insane on average. It's an incredible card. You don't even need. I'm not even talking about specific, like, dredge synergy or whatever, you know, putting things at the bottom that are mechs, making that more likely that you will draw some mechs, some impactful cards.
No, this is pre-nerf Fungal Fortunes, except it doesn't discard the card it whiffs on.
Exactly. This is just straight up, just 2 mana draw 3, maybe 4 cards. Without any additional synergy. And if there is additional synergy, then this is even better. Right? This card, like, if Mech Paladin's viable, it's going to be a lot thanks to this one. Just really, really powerful draw effect. Garden's Grace is interesting. I was thinking about, like, OTKs. There's actually something you can do with Smite and that new 5-mana Dormant Pirate. Could be kind of cute, but, you know, we'll see. Paladin, I think Radar Detector is just a card that can carry an archetype. So
yeah, it's absolutely around the way that Fungal Fortunes was, the way that Book of Spectres was. Same kind of deal here.
Yeah. Now Priest, maybe strangely, is the class I'm most excited about with the cards that were revealed so far. Switcheroo is a card I love. I adore this card. It's so good.
3 mana draw 2 minions and swap their stats. And we're probably going to talk about this along with Princess Valish together.
I don't even need to talk about Valish. I mean, Switcheroo, think about it. You're playing Kazakhstan Priest, let's say. And your minions are Lightmon, Netherdrake, and Kazakhstan. You play this Switcheroo, you draw Kazakhstan and a Netherdrake. You have an 8/8 Netherdrake ready to clear your opponent's board the next turn. And whenever you're ready, you're going to play the 4/4 Kazakhstan. Who cares? Still your win condition. But not only is it a decent draw, right? It's Arcane Intellect. But you can create a big swing with it. And there's so much potential to abuse this. Also, with the next card, which is Valish, Priestess Valish. I've heard some talk that, you know, this isn't insane somehow because, I don't know, Priest doesn't have draw or whatever. If you haven't noticed, Priest is getting insane draw in this set. Like, really powerful stuff. I mean, Galen hinted in the interview that we had that Priest is going to need some draw. And I was thinking, oh, yeah, Galen, so you're going to give them a bunch of some draw effects. Yeah, some nice draw effect. No, we're getting Switcheroo and we're getting Handmaiden, which is a 3-mana 3/2 battle cry. If you've cast 3 spells while holding this, draw 3 cards. This is the best Naga card. This is an insanely good card because you can think about it like an auctioneer, right? But you don't need to play it or a field contact. If it's in your hand, then great. You have a bunch of cheap spells, you play and you reload. You can cycle very aggressively with this card. And then, since you have so much draw with Switcheroo and Handmaiden and other cards like Gift of the Narrow and stuff that priest already has, you can play Priestess Valish to just create a big swing to come back to the board or to blow out your opponent some way. Zero mana legendary, 1/1, basically a wisp with a battle cry, refresh an empty mana crystal for each spell you've cast this turn. Now, think about it like this. Worst case scenario, let's pretend we don't play a billion spells. We're playing just one spell. If it's just one spell, this is Innervate attached to a wisp. If it's just one spell, it's already better than Innervate at its current iteration.
It doesn't let you go above your current mana crystals.
Sure,
Innervate lets you skip a turn. I think that's pretty important as far as distinctions
compare
go.
It. Okay, so let's compare it to Mana Biscuit. Way better than Mana Biscuit. If you just played one spell, right?
But Biscuit was pretty narrow in terms of where it was played. I am not as convinced on Valish in the current context with the spell pool that we have.
Yeah, but you need to think about Handmaiden.
I know about Handmaiden, but what spells are you pulling? What spells are you casting?
I mean, you have, like, first of all, you have, like, Desperate Prayer. You have Gift of the Narrow. You're gonna have stuff.
And then what? Then what do we do? Where does this turn go? What do we do with this turn? Where do we go? We have to play a bunch of spells first, then refresh the crystals, and play something else later that turn. Where are we going and what are we doing with it?
Valish is a swing enabler. Okay, so here's the thing. The problem with this line of thinking is that which often is where people fall when it comes to like evaluating the cards, is that you're trying to envision the deck and what it's supposed to do when we don't have all the information, and we also haven't done any theorycrafting, and we haven't played a single game of Hearthstone. What I do know is that Valish enables you to get a lot of mana per turn. Eventually, these things are very powerful in Hearthstone because one of the biggest limiters to your ability to play Hearthstone is your mana. And if you can play in a single turn much more mana than you're supposed to have available to it, you can do powerful things. You can do a multitude of powerful things, and the details about what those powerful things are doesn't matter as much. What I know is that Valish gives you a lot of mana. Can give you a lot of mana for very little investment. And you can do pretty much whatever you want with that kind of mana. So the potential is definitely there. I think that if this card was a rogue card, like if Valish was a rogue card, everybody would instantly say it would be broken. And because people, it's easier for people to envision a rogue deck that powerfully cycles and plays a bunch of cheese spells and plays Valish and stuff like that. And in Priest, it's harder because, it's a slower control class or whatever. And it's hard for people to imagine it. But I just think that this card in a lot of other classes, if it was revealed, then people would say, oh, this is absolutely nuts. And in Priest, people are saying, oh, maybe it's not insane. I'm pretty sure this card will eventually be insane. And it's just...
I agree in the eventuality part, and I think it's a very powerful fight. Obviously, in Rogue and Shadow Step, in a class with Shadow Step, you can't do this.
Not even Shadow Step. Forget it. Like, put it in Druid or something.
How great this would be in Druid.
Or you put it in Shaman.
The thing about Valish's text that stands out to me is refreshing is so much less powerful than adding, but this card will be in a Trolldon video the first week of the expansion, if not the first day, and it will be a hated, super busted card at some point this standard year, but it's so dependent on what we do with it. I don't know if Priest has the support and structure right now for it to be particularly powerful, because people are talking about Bless stuff. Bless, I don't know if that's it, especially considering you have to play the spells first to get the mana back. The palm reading basically gives you an extra mana crystal per spell in your hand. So this is already somewhere in that area. Now, being comparable to palm reading is a good place to be. I don't know what the deck and context around this card looks like with the stuff that Priest has right now. It is a powerful effect. It will be good. I saw people saying the sky is falling when they first saw this card. I don't think
Sky is not falling. The sky is not falling. This shouldn't be overreaction of like, oh, this card is broken. But yeah, this card is powerful. And as I said, like it can be some combo piece of like something insane. But even it's like more low to the ground utilization of like just like a nice turn four where you get two extra mana to be able to clear that threat that your opponent just played can be just game winning.
If that's worth the card, like it could be, if that's worth the card.
Priest likes to hoard resources. Priest usually is a class that historically has not had problems of maintaining good hand size and good resource management. So having a card that allows it to break mana points at certain turns, I think is very powerful. I think it's going to be very useful for this kind of class. Like, it's not a class that starved for resources. And it's also getting some insane draw engines, too.
Yeah, it just feels like you have to be proactive behind this, and I don't know what those proactive situations look like, because you're having the same turn twice. You're not doubling your mana. You're not jumping ahead. You're playing the same amount of crystals twice. So you have to start with the spells and then follow up with something good after. And if you're having a swing turn, that means putting some board presence down. And I will say that Priest has historically not always been the best class at putting a bunch of board presence down, and the deck that is best at that does not play a lot of spells.
You don't need to put board presence. You can remove, refresh, and remove. Or refresh, like, generate and remove. You don't need to put board up for Valish to be good.
What are we generating with?
I don't know. A billion things. Like, priest stuff. There's going
to
be priest
stuff.
What are
the cards? There are four cards left to be revealed in the set. Four in the set. So, I don't know what generation tools we're getting. But I think the effect is powerful. There will be a point in this year where players justifiably complain about this card. Just as of right now, I think it is not necessarily aligned with any of the strategy that Priest has.
If this card is not played by December of this year, I will be absolutely floored.
Oh, by December for sure. This set on release, I'm not sure.
But let's agree on December, right? And
by the six set meta? Oh, this is a six set card if I've ever seen a six set card.
This is 100% Z's play in December.
Yes.
And it has pretty good chances he play this set too. I don't think it's...
It could. The first reaction that I saw to this card was, oh my god, what are they doing? They're printing a broken card. And I'm pulling back from that, whereas you seem
it's
to have seen
broken.
A different reaction.
It's insane mana biscuit. That's what this is. This is okay. Nutty mana biscuit. No need to spend mana before to store it. It's just a really cracked mana biscuit.
A new card was revealed 3 minutes ago. Do you want to hear it? It's not a priest card, but I'll tell you anyway. Volcanomancy. It is a mage 2-mana epic fire spell. Choose a minion. When it dies, deal 3 damage to all other minions.
Okay, that sounds like pretty powerful AoE.
So it's 2-mana do nothing now, but then when the thing dies, whenever it dies.
You combine it with other cards.
Yeah.
Or even trade on board, and it's pretty good. Like, this is devastating against token decks. Yep. Like, you can just play this and ping even sometimes. Ping a 1-1.
If you have a turn 1 play and a turn 2 play, and they say Volcanomancy go, what do you do? You play more? You stop? What do you do?
Yeah. This card seems really good.
That's actually like Doomsayer-esque. Like, if I play this going into your turn 3, like, and you've played a couple drops already, you kind of have to skip your turn. You kind of can't play more stuff, because then it just blows
up. The only thing that doesn't make it as insane is that it deals to all minions. It's it's symmetrical. If this was asymmetrical, it would be busted, but... Yeah, seems okay. Seems pretty decent. But yeah, pretty exciting. Switcheroo, Handmaiden, love these cards. Valish is like decent alongside them. I'm pretty sure Valish eventually is going to do something very impactful.
Sure. But Handmaiden.
Yeah, Handmaiden is
we're
going to
see
good.
Handmaiden. That card's really, really strong.
And you can also tutor Handmaiden. It's a cheap card. Like, all the Nagas are theoretically can be tutored. So that they'll
be using the Naga draw
hand
card
and be
the neutral 3/4 that if you played a spell while holding this, draw Naga.
Yeah. You can theoretically tutor all Nagas, which make them a little bit better in theory in terms of the synergy that they require to be fueled by spells
or by stuff in hand, but handmade in out of them is the best of them all, because she like this card encourages you to play a bunch of cheap spells and then refills, and it's just easy. It's just gonna be like field content kind of card.
Kind of reminds me of that Warlock 4 mana Galakrond Invoke card. Whatever the name was, the 4 mana 5/4 that if you've get invoked twice, you draw 3. Kind of similar sort of thing, yeah, where you jump through a couple hoops and then you draw a shit ton of cards.
Yeah, it's. I think Handmaiden is a 4-star card without a doubt.
Yep.
Rogue has some really interesting stuff. Rogue is getting a card that I feel will it's gonna be the talk of Reddit.
Oh, Rogue got a Ticketus. It got a Ticketus.
It's Mega Ticketus. Pirate Admiral Hook Tusk, 8 mana, 8/8. Battle cry, if you've summoned 8 other pirates this game, plunder the enemy. And plunder the enemy has like 3 options, right?
It's a discover, yeah. So you can either take control of your opponent's highest attack minion, you can take 2 cards from their hand, or you can take 5 cards from their deck. It is unclear where the cards from the opponent's deck go. As of right now, we are assuming they are zone to zone. I don't think that's true. Or at least I don't know that's true. As of right now, I'm assuming it is zone to zone. So board to board, deck to deck, or hand to hand. So it is a direct transfer. If it goes to hand, this card is much better. But my assumption is that it directly moves the cards from the equivalent zone to the equivalent zone.
I mean, even if it moves from deck to deck, this is stronger than Ticketus, right?
Sure, that is because that is not a big compliment, but you are correct. I do think it is better than Ticketus. It also is important to note, if you summoned 8 other pirates this game, not if you've cast, so the pirate ship card that makes 2/3/3 pirates and then shuffles a cast one or puts a cast one drawn on the bottom of the deck to summon 2 more. If you manage to get both of those, that is 4 of your 8 pirates already.
Is Tenwa rotating? I think it is, right?
Yes, it's in Dark Moon.
Okay. Shadow Step, we don't know. I mean, Shadow Stepping this is very optimistic anyway. But yeah, this card, the effect is more powerful than Ticketus. If you're playing against a combo deck and you know that some of their pieces are in hand, this can give you like a Hail Mary of taking those pieces away. If it's a long drawn out game, then basically discarding 5 cards in your opponent's deck might be relevant. Again, if it's deck to deck and not deck to hand, if like though taking those 5 cards and discards a lot worse, because you could like if it was to your hand, if you could take 5 cards to your hand, then this is an incredible reload, right?
It's Lightforge Crusader sort of thing, right?
Yeah. It's better than that, right? It's not random. It's cards from your opponents. It's constructed worthy cards. So that can't be relevant. I mean, the card seems flashy. The thing that I'm a little bit more concerned with is that the requirement itself, not because it's, whether it's easy or not to accomplish to summon 8 pirates, is whether this is like we're making another Quest Warrior kind of deck where things are very linear and you just spend mana on progressing your quest, which is this card, right? What's the difference? This is basically a quest reward, and you're summoning pirates every turn, and the deck is not very flexible otherwise, and just plays the Ticketus. Like, this is like very, very, feels very Timmy. Now, there could be some twists, right? There could be some, I don't know, a Violet Teacher that summons pirates, making this a bit more dynamic. If we get that kind of stuff, then I'll be more interested in playing this deck. But if this is just about Quest Warrior, where you're spending all your mana or you're dedicating all of your mana into activating Hook Tusk, so then you can ticket to see your opponent, then I'm less excited about the prospects of this deck. But clearly, Ticketus Warlock was a deck that, even though a lot of people complain about, was weak. And people loved playing it, and they loved the effect of like destroying the opponent's deck. Ixar talked about it in the past, that some players just like to be mean. And this is the kind of card that Hook Tusk is. and we'll definitely see it play being played. Whether it's going to be a good deck or not is another question, but regardless of that, we're going to see it played because it's an effect that's too enticing for a significant portion of the player base not to dabble into.
Yep, it's I think most of the time, if I envision myself playing this card, it is 8 mana, 8/8 mind control. And 8 mana, 8/8 mind control is a good card. I don't know if that's enough to win games of Hearthstone. I don't know what the meta is going to look like, but that's compelling. I'm compelled by that. The other options seem optimistic.
Yeah. I mean, Rogue doesn't really want, like, if we're looking at Ticketus, Rogue isn't really a class that wants to prolong the game forever and get to the fatigue. So I don't think, like, the fatigue implication is very significant or relevant. The taking two cards away from hand into your hand could be something. It could be impactful, especially if you're playing against decks with that are, you know, highly focused on a singular card to win. Things like Muzaki Mages and stuff. And yeah, this is 8 mana, but I do expect the meta to slow down after rotation. And those kind of decks are going to be slower, and you might be able to turn 8 Hook Tusk and take something away that's important and just game winning. But again, the manner in which you activate Hook Tusk seems very one-dimensional, at least with the current cards. Unless we get like Violet Teacher effect, where you just summon a bunch of them multitude of time, and then there's some more resource management rather than mindlessly spamming pirates in order to activate this on curve. Yeah. And that, I think, is going to, like, the difference, that's going to make the difference whether this deck is dynamic and interesting and good, or it's just Questline Warrior.
Yep. And there is also the third possibility of there aren't enough pirates and then this is not a thing.
I think there are going to be enough pirates. I mean, most of the Rogue set is pirates. Like, all the other cards other than Crab, which we'll mention, like, Sunkaneer is a pirate, Cutlass Career is a pirate that also draws you a pirate, the ship is also summons pirate, everything is a pirate. So far, I'm seeing just pirates. Just yes. Things that you can play to activate Hook Tusk. And then you've got the Crab. I love the Crab.
This is the hero Kurtris, right? That's what this card is?
Kind of, yeah.
So it's a 6 mana, 6/5 beast. It says your Krabatoa claws have +2 attack, and the appendage is there are 2/2/1 rushers that equip 2/1 claws when they die, 2/1 weapons. The minions and the weapons are Krabatoa's claws. So effectively, the turn you played is there are 4/1 rushers and the weapons are 4/1. So you attack for 4 rush, you have 4 attack weapon, you attack for another 4 rush, and then you have another weapon for next turn. 12 damage, 4 of which has charge. Then you have a 6/5 and a weapon. It's probably a 2/1, but could be a 4/1 next turn. It's pretty good.
It's kind of nutty, right?
It's hero Kurtris.
You play it. It's even more than Kurtris, right? That's like you have 3 rushers. I guess Kurtris can scale infinite, right?
Yeah, and gives you 5 armor. This gives you a 6/5 instead, but you don't get the hero power of the armor.
I mean, Kurtris is better, okay? Kurtris is better, but this is a singular card that you don't need to set up at all, right? Yes. You play this, you have 2 4/1 rushers immediately. You run into something, you get your weapon, you use your weapon to hit something else, you run the other Crab hand into something else, you get another weapon. It's like basically 12 damage, and 4 of it can go face immediately. 4 of it is a weapon that can also go face. So this card is very, very good in terms of board impact and stabilization, sort of like AoE for Rogue. So I think this is very valuable and probably going to see play.
Yep. I'd expect this to be in most non-poison Rogue decks. Just because
this is stronger. I think this is stronger than Jandis.
5 mana Jandis?
Yeah.
Not stronger better than 5 mana.
Okay. Maybe
5 mana Jandis is pretty goofy, man. It is.
Okay, without Shadow Step.
Yes.
Like, because Jandis, a lot of the power was the Shadow Step, right?
this is in the conversation of talking about unnerfed Jandis Barov, which should give the listeners an idea of how highly we think of this card.
Yeah, yeah. This card is very, very good.
I think most rogue decks should start with it in the deck and have to find a reason to cut it as opposed to find a reason to add it. The reason to not play it is if you have a Swine Tusk Shank equipped. Otherwise, you should play this.
Yeah, basically. If you're not playing weapon-centric decks for rogue, then you're going to play Karabatoa. Really good card. Shaman. Shaman got some nutty stuff. Shaman set, maybe my favorite so far.
What I love is how Spell Schools finally gave Shaman an identity, because it always just had this weird feeling of like they don't know what to do with it, and Spell Schools made it feel like they know what to do with it.
Yeah, but it does feel like it's taking a lot from Mage, and like taking a lot of the space from Mage.
No, Mage has robots now, it's fine.
I'm pretty sure the Legendary was a Mage card in development. Like, it does, like, Radiance of Ashara, right? 3 mana, 3/4. You get fire spell damage +2. Your nature spells cost 1 less. And after you cast a frost spell, you gain 3 armor.
Oh, so you think it was arcane spells instead of nature, and it was a mage card? Yeah,
I think so. And Sorcerer's Apprentice gave them trauma, so became a shaman card. That's my theory.
It's okay for shaman to have stuff to do that's good, and this is good.
And also, remember that mage has some fire spell synergy that it got in a previous set that's just sitting around doing nothing. But anyway, in Shaman, like, Mage is the loser, Shaman is the winner here, because this card is nutty. You don't even need, like, even if you're just playing, like, a free Shaman deck with Wind Chills, this can give you a lot of armor. Like, you can chain a bunch of Wind Chills in the same turn, maybe even with Bracing Cold or something, and you can just tank up with this card. Then you have Nature Spells costing 1 less, which is, right, can help you create some board swing.
What are the nature spells we have right now? That is the biggest question they have here, but because we lose Serpent Shrine and we lose Lightning Bloom. The Lightning Bloom doesn't need to cost any less. It already costs nothing.
I mean, Lightning Bolt, you can play Lightning Bolt for 0 with this card. I don't know. This card has tons of potential utilization in a multitude of decks. It's going to see play. There's no way this card doesn't see play. It just does too much. Also, in Wild, it kind of breaks things with unstable evolution.
It's kind of funny to me that in Wild, the way to nerf it is to change unstable evolution from repeatable this turn to Echo, because Echo has the cost floor built in. But it's a very easy nerf for them to do.
Yeah, if that happens. But yeah, this card is good. Bioluminescence, maybe the coolest card. Like, this is like build your own Malagos, basically.
It's bloodlust for spells, right? It's spell bloodlust.
Yeah, it's like you're just building your own Malagos. You're going to play a bunch of tokens. Let's think about what the tokens are. Probably piranhas. You build your own Malagos with a bunch of piranhas and you burn the opponent down. That's the new Burn Shaman, potentially. And if you need to have board, right, you need to have piranhas, you have Schooling, which is a 1 mana spell that gives you 3 piranhas. And let me remind you that playing multiple piranhas boosts each other, right? You fuel attack.
Yeah, the piranhas is your hero. It's a 1 mana, the piranha swarmers, they're 1 mana, 1/1 rushers that are beasts. And after you summon a piranha swarmer, every time you summon a Piranha Swarmer, they gain +1 attack. So you get, if you have 3 of them, it's a 3/1 rush, a 2/1 rush, and a 1/1 rush. Pretty powerful.
Yeah. They basically feed on each other. So the more piranhas you have, the more swing potential you have. So you play Schooling on 1, and on turn 3, you have like 6 attack value and rush, which is pretty good with the 3 piranhas. Kind of like muster for battle kind of deal. So, but obviously what I see is playing bioluminescence, or whatever, however you pronounce that word, and
spell bloodlust.
Yeah, and just building your own Malagos.
You didn't even talk about my favorite shaman card in this set.
I know. We'll get to that. But yeah, but we also have Piranha Poacher, which also gives you piranhas and kind of needs to be killed. It's a 3-mana 2/5 that at the end of your turn, add a Piranha Swarmer to your hand. So there's some deck here. There's something happening here, I think, with Piranha Burn Shaman that I can see happening. But yeah, Coral Keeper. That has to be the card you're talking about, right?
Emerald Spellstone is the card I'm talking about. So
yeah.
Coral Keeper.
5-mana 3/4. Battlecry. Summon a 3/3 elemental for each spell school you've cast this game. So multicaster, but board. Creates
this
a board. 5-mana 3/4.
Busted as hell, right? Like, this is 5 mana for... We have Windchill. We have the new 1-mana fire spell. We have Lightning Bolt. Like, we have so
Gazer.
Many...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many ways to activate this to the point where it can summon on curve 3/3/3s, maybe even 4.
We don't have Arcane yet, I don't think. Primordial Studies and Devolving Missiles both rotate, so I think we only have access to Nature, Fire, Frost
fire,
at the moment.
Fire, Nature, and Frost? Okay, so...
So it's only a 5-mana 12/13.
Yeah, just 12/13, just a casual 12/13 on turn 5. Pretty reasonable. Yeah, this card is powerful.
I've seen them nerf this card before, and this doesn't have to be in your hand when you play Secrets. This is just like, it says this game, not in your hand.
Yes. You don't need to fuel it. You don't need this to be in your hand for you to activate it. You can just top deck this on 5 and play it, and yeah, just win. And yeah, this was a good time to print it after Lightning Bloom rotates, because I don't want to think about what this does with Lightning Bloom.
Oh my goodness, that would be great.
Okay, imagine this. Turn 2, turn 1, you remove you deal a bit of damage and stall a bit your opponent with like Windchill and Geyser. And then turn 3, you bloom this out and it summons 3/3/3s. So nuts.
Yeah. Really
good.
But Bloom
is gone,
rotated.
So good. Yeah. It's right on time. Shaman set is so cool.
The biggest question that I have, what do we call this deck? I kind of want to call it Multicaster Shaman, but you could call it Spell School Shaman.
Is it one deck? Is it a multitude of decks? Because Shaman right now is so versatile. I can see multiple things happening. The Bioluminescence deck, yeah, I think is going to be different a little bit.
Sure.
More combo-centric.
Yeah, that's Burn Shaman. But the deck that tries to play for Coral Keeper, if that's a different deck...
I think that's still going to...
You think Coral Keeper and Bioluminescence go in the same deck?
Yeah, I think they do go into the same deck. The question is whether you forego the combo, build your own Malgus thing, and just play Coral Keeper, or you play Coral Keeper and you play... I can't see you passing on Coral Keeper.
No.
Ever. Like, why would you ever pass on this card? I mean, you're playing Geyser. You're going to play Lightning Bolt. You're going to play Windchill Package.
Well, and we're going to play Multicaster. Like, we're playing Multicaster every time. So, Coral Keeper is, what if Multicaster just randomly killed your opponent?
Yeah, basically. This card is very, very good.
Though the biggest downside I see is that Coral Keeper curves very well into your opponent's Snowfall Guardian.
Interesting, huh? Interesting. So, you're saying that the counter to Shaman is Shaman?
Yes. Also,
that is concerning.
If we're playing Snowfall Guardian and Macaw on the same deck, you know what's good with Macaw is Coral Keeper?
Oh.
Because they clear you, just make more 3/3s.
Oh. You know what, Hat? I even forgot about Brilliant Macaw. This card is even better than...
clear your board of 12 attack on turn 5, just run it back.
Yeah, this card is like... Is this one... This is a top 3 card in the set?
They nerfed this card when it needed to be in your hand to power up and didn't give you a base body. It was called Emerald Spellstone back then.
Yeah, I remember. And you needed to play crappy Secrets to activate that card. This card is way better than Emerald Spellstone.
And there's a 3/3 that recasts it.
Remember, Emerald Spellstone was insane. And this card is so much better. It's so much better in a multitude of ways. doesn't need to be activated while in hand. You're not limited by playing crappy secrets. You just playing spells that you want to put in your deck anyway, and it's, you have Macaw.
Oh no, I have to play so Windchill. What will I do?
Card is insane. Yeah. Shaman so far, Shaman's got like best set in Alterac Valley without a doubt, and so far shaping out to be the best set too. Though there's still much to be revealed, like Warlock. We haven't seen any new cards since the last podcast, so we might as well
skip. Gigafin was new. I think we didn't see Gigafin.
I predicted that Gigafin, like in the last podcast, if you listen, I talked about, you know, maybe we pull, with Vilefiend, we pull like a huge impactful Murloc, maybe something that costs like 8 mana. And there you go, Gigafin. Really good card. Really cool card. I mean, 8 mana legendary. 7/4. Colossal +1. Battlecry, destroy all enemy minions. Death Rattle, spit them out. The appendage, which is Gigafin's Maw, is a 6 mana 4/7. And the Death Rattle is permanently destroy all minions inside Gigafin. So you play this, you get a Twisting Nether +7/4 and a 4/7 taunt. And if they kill the taunt, then they don't get back their board, right?
Well,
if they kill
Twisting Nether targeting them, it doesn't eat your own stuff. So if you want the most expensive mass dispel in history, you found it.
This card is nutty. Also, Grimoire of Sacrifice, you can play this on the taunt immediately to guarantee...
Oh, with Grimoire, yeah.
Yeah, that it doesn't, that they don't come back. Also, you can cheat this out with Vilefiend and have Gigafin be played for no mana cost at all.
Probably pretty good at 0 mana.
Pretty good at 0 mana. And not even that bad at 8 mana. So, really good card. We got a lot of new warrior cards since last week. Ashvain.
Should we talk about the Colossal first? Or do you want to talk about Ashvain first?
Yeah, let's talk about the Colossal.
Okay. So Colossal is Nelly the Great Thresher, 7 mana, 5/5 beast. Battlecry, you discover 3 pirates to crew Nelly's ship. The ship is a 5 mana, 2/6 taunt. Death Rattle, you add those 3 pirates to your hand. They cost 1. You cannot discover the same pirate more than once. No, you will not see 3 smites. So it's 3 different pirates. It is discover, so it's only warrior and neutral. And then you add them to your hand when the taunt dies, they cost 1. I believe this is the weakest Colossal.
Yeah, I don't like this one.
You don't really want to play this in Quest Pirate Warrior because it's not a pirate and it costs 7.
It's so slow.
And it claws your hand, it doesn't progress your quest, and also your quest reward is kind of infinite pirates, so why do you need 3 more? Yes, 1 mana pirates are good, but instead I'd rather have the 0 mana pirate that Rokara summons every single turn.
I'll tell you what if you play this in like, well, if you're playing Control Warrior, you want to play Kazakhstan.
You do.
I'm thinking maybe in Control Warrior, if there was no Kazakhstan, maybe you use it just like, I mean, it's a 7 mana 5/5 plus a 2/6. It's a lot of stats, right? And then it helps you like reload, kind of like, but we're playing Kazakhstan, so no.
One of my co-hosts on Coin Conceit said, what if you played this in Charge where you're just to find a 1 mana smite? Kind of see it, but I'd rather play Kazakhstan.
No, I don't like it. I mean, maybe you play Vandar. Maybe this helps Vandar be better, right?
This,
in that build, but...
That is a good indicator of what is not
Barov
a good
is
card.
Rotating. No, but Barov is rotating, so Vandar builds are gonna... Like, it's gonna make more sense to play that in the Galvengar Warrior, but
this is the only one that feels like it's not a huge stat bomb. It's a 5/5 and a 2/6 taunt, and on turn 7, that's pretty weak overall.
It's a value engine. It's a very slow value engine because the taunt also needs to die.
Not even an engine, just kind of a one-time value payoff. You get the mana and the cards, but
yeah, I don't think this is good in Quest Warrior at all. It's too slow. You need to complete the quest by the time you want to play Nelly. I don't like it. Also, Lady Ashvain is kind of whatever, like Hoggart. I mean, it's obviously better, right? Because if you have a weapon, it upgrades it. It's like, it's kind of like Krasnov, right? but
it's so it's a 5-mana 5/5 legendary that Battlecry gives all weapons in your hand, deck, and battlefield +1/+1. It's a bunch of damage if you're willing to play just enough weapons and you have them equipped. Like Outrider's Axe on 4, this on 5, that's gonna make some people unhappy to face. Like, if you're facing that, you're not going to be thrilled about that.
Yeah, but I'm more thinking about, rather than a value weapons, more like damage weapons. Yeah. I mean, I think that Ashvayne is going to see play at some point. There will be a weapon-centric warrior deck that's going to want this.
Even Blacksmithing Hammer, the tradable hammer, is like, you get... Battlecry gives each of your hammers somewhere between 7 and 19 extra damage, based on if they've been traded or not. It's a bunch.
This is a powerful card, but I just think it's uninspired. It's like they took Hobart, right? Grapplehammer or whatever his name was.
The callback from Mean Streets of Gadgetzan. That's been a lot of years, man.
Yeah, and they tried to make the card good, right? Basically. It's a lot better. Ashvayne is a lot better because the durability is really what makes it put it over the top. And I'm pretty sure it's going to see play. There's going to be some deck that's going to want it. I just think it's a little bit boring. It's not too interesting. Speaking of interesting, though, The Fires of Zin Azari. What a card. 2-mana spell. It's a fire spell, interestingly. Replace your deck with minions that cost 5 or more. They cost 5. You know what you do with this hat?
No. No, I do not.
I'll tell you what you do with this hat.
Oh, boy.
You Vandar? Play this. Yes. And then you play Vandar.
Oh, my goodness. Wait a
minute.
And
then all of those minions cost 2.
Okay. So, step 1, Maul into Fires and Vandar. Step 2, don't be dead. Step 3... Play a bunch of shit.
It's warrior. You're playing warrior. No, listen. You're playing warrior with just all removal, right? You're not even playing a win condition. You're just playing Fires of Zin Azari and Vandar.
But do you play this in turn 2 or turn 3?
Why would you not play this on turn 2?
Well, if you don't have... Okay, so you play it on turn 2. You no longer have all removal. You have all 5-mana minions.
No, no.
So you better hope your opening hand is enough.
Listen. No, you don't play this on turn 2. Okay, forget it. You don't play this on turn 2. You play this...
Oh, on 6. You play it on 6.
Okay, play it on 6 with Vandar. You play this and you play Vandar.
That's the dream curve.
And before then, you just survive. You're a warrior. You're going to survive. And then you do this. The only problem, though, is can we tutor Vandar consistently in some way?
Are we saying that's the only problem?
You just need to survive. You're just playing control warrior. We're playing control. We're playing all the removal in the world. We're not dying.
So why play Kazakhstan when we could get any minion that costs 5 or more could even be a Kazakhstan?
Okay, so here's the problem. I know this. I know that Kazakhstan exists. And if we're going to talk about everything, is that why not Kazakhstan? Like, a lot of cards would just seem not viable. Let's try to make this work, Hat. Just this one. Maybe it's going to end up worse than Kazakhstan. I don't know. Probably. But... this is cool. Like, if I can tutor Vandar consistently in some way and play this on 6, then this is a win condition. I mean, it doesn't matter what card. Like, you can get Cairn, and it's 2-mana. I mean, that's going to do some damage. And it's all minions. You turn your entire deck into minions, so it's all just pressure.
You know how much damage it's going to do?
You're not
going to do 5.
What?
Going to do 5 damage. That's what Cairn's going to do.
Yeah, it could do 5 damage now, and if you kill it, you summon another 5/5. It's Cairn.
Yeah? Which is also going to do 5 damage. It's going to do 5 damage twice.
Also, sometimes you're going to draw like a 5-mana Ysera.
Ooh.
Or a 5-mana Alexstrasza. Or, it's a 2-mana Ysera. Like, think about it. Think about the potential here.
2-Sera?
Yeah. Just as 2-Sera.
I don't know.
I like this card. I love this card. I think this card is cool.
Tell.
And, just let me tutor Vandar, Blizzard. Let me tutor Vandar, and we can get this done.
Yeah, I really appreciate that after all these years, you can be this optimistic. Been a long time playing Hearthstone.
I think this is cool. I think this card's cool.
I don't think it's cool. I think it's hot. It's fires. Fire is hot, Zach.
If Kazakhstan wasn't in the card pool right now, I think you'd be excited about this too. I think it would be.
Okay, hold on. I want to be clear. I think this card is rad. I don't know if it's good. I think it's rad.
I mean, this can be good. Like, think of, okay, this is a card that makes you not need to play any other win condition.
Yeah, like Kazakhstan.
Yes, that's the same kind of niche.
Okay, so in next year's four set meta, I want to see Fire's Warrior.
I don't know. Maybe we see it now. I don't know. Vandar. Maybe. Vandar is a thing. Vandar is a thing.
Okay, so we've got some more Warrior cards, though. We've got a couple more, and they printed Twin Emperor Veklor, except the second copy is Rush now?
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. Black Scale Brute. It's 7 mana. I don't know. It's just,
back in the day, we paid 7 mana for 2/4/6 taunts, and we were like, this is the reason to play C'Thun.
Yeah. And now we get 7 mana, 5/6 taunt, and a 5/6 rush if you have a weapon equipped, and we're just not enthusiastic that much about it. It's okay. I mean, it's not bad, but it's a Naga, so you can tutor it, whatever, but I'm Warrior. I want to play Kazakhstan. You know what?
Or Fires of Zinajari.
We're going to get Brutes off of Fires of Zinajari. It's going to be 2 mana. It's going to be the Nuts.
Ah.
Oh, but we don't have weapon. So it's not going to be active. Oh, unlucky.
Well, no, we just got to summon something that gives us a weapon. There are some battle cards.
I mean,
2
mana, 5/6. Yeah, I mean, I guess.
It'll be fine.
Trendstalker. Okay. 9 mana, 8/9. Battlecry. Attack 3 different random enemies. Enemies.
You go face.
So this goes face.
It's Embers of Ragnaros. This is Embers of Ragnaros.
Now that you say that, Had, this sounds a lot better.
The difference between Embers and an empty board would hit your opponent's face 3 times, which would kill them.
Yeah, there's that little thing that Embers
of
Ragnaros wins the game.
This doesn't kill your opponent versus the other one does kill the opponent. But this is a more predictable Embers of Ragnaros without the crazy ceiling. But still, like, I made a deal with 3 things.
You know what I see in this card?
What do you see?
A card that would be pretty sick to draw for 2 mana after you play the Fires of Zinajari. Let's go.
I agree that Trenchstalker at 2 mana would be very strong.
I am only evaluating Warrior. At this point, I'm only evaluating cards. If they cost more than 5, I'm evaluating based on Fires of Zinajari. This is how meta-defining this spell is.
So,
every card is viable suddenly because of Fires of Zinajari.
It's worth noting.
Stalker, what?
It's worth noting. This does not say warrior cards or neutral cards. This can get you outside of the class. You can go anywhere. You can get whatever you want.
You can get a 2 mana Tyrion. I'm telling you, Had, Fires of Zinajari is the nuts. Card is the nuts.
Absolutely. The
nuts. Just let me tutor Vandar, Blizzard.
Yes.
If you haven't done it this sad, just sneak it in. Just do something. Like, sneak it in. Wait, is there a way to draw a minion? Is there a way to tutor a minion if you have no other minions?
I'm not building this deck for you on the air in my head. That's not what's happening.
Okay.
Right,
we're gonna find a way to tutor a minion. We're gonna play 29 removal cards and Fires of Zinajari and Vandar. We're gonna tutor Vandar somehow, and we're gonna do it.
So yeah, I see what you're doing. You are figuring out one of your warrior theory crafting decks here live on the air before you write the article.
Yes, exactly.
We're going to see a Zinajari deck in the article. That's going to happen.
100%. There's no way I'm not theory crafting this deck. It's going to be so funny.
I am very excited.
Okay, so neutrals. I mean, there's some cool neutrals. Queen Azjara, right?
We should definitely talk about Queen Azjara. She is the Lich King of this set, in that she is the lore-based legendary that will probably be overplayed and is cool as hell. So she's a 5-mana 5/5. She's a Naga, of course.
Yeah.
Battlecry, if you've cast 3 spells while holding this, choose an ancient relic. There are 4 ancient relics. Tidestone of Golgoneth, 1 mana. Shuffle 5 random spells into your deck, set their cost to 1, then draw 2 cards. There is Horn of the Ancients, 3 mana, add a random colossal minion to your hand, it costs 1. Xalatath, 2 mana weapon, 05. After you cast a spell, deal 2 damage to the enemy hero and lose 1 durability. And Ring of Tides, after you cast a spell, this becomes a copy of it that costs 1. It's worth noting, Ring of Tides is not worded the same as Flabidinous Floop or Shadow Reflection or whatever. It transforms once and then stops transforming. It is not constantly shifting. It should, as worded, copy the first spell that you play while this is in your hand and stay that way as a 1-mana copy.
That makes it a lot worse.
It does.
I was looking forward to doing some shenanigans with Ring of Tides, but if it doesn't continuously transform, then it's a lot worse.
The other spells that are like this have been worded as whenever you cast a spell. I don't think this works that way, but we never know with Hearthstone text.
I hope it works that way and just inconsistency. But if it doesn't work this way, then yeah, this is a lot worse. You can't really... Like, if you want to do some combo with Ring of Tides, you're going to have to play Azshara on kind of the setup turn immediately rather than just store it for a point later in the game, which makes it a lot worse. I guess the weapon is the thing that kind of gives you some sort of win condition. I mean, 10 damage for 2 mana potentially is pretty good. But
that's the reason that I thought about playing this in Quest Hunter is specifically the weapon. Because it ends up being 10 damage.
A lot of... Yeah, yeah.
It's a pyroblast.
I guess... Is this better than the 2-mana legendary?
So...
For Hunter? I think it is, honestly.
It is. This is effectively... You're already playing a ton of spells. This is effectively 7-mana total for 10 damage. Whereas the ceiling of Face Naga is 2-mana for 8 damage if you're on turn 10.
Which is never happening.
And if it does happen and you get to turn 10 as Quest Hunter with a handful of spells, then you're probably fine.
I mean, let's be real. We neither of these cards are going to see playing Quest Hunter, I think.
I don't think so. And the biggest problem I see with Azshara is that the 4 treasures, not a single one touches the board even a little bit. So it's a neutral High Spear and Togwaggle. But the payoffs are so much worse than Wondrous Wand, right?
Yeah, you're playing a 5-mana 5/5, and the treasures, like these cards that you generate, don't affect the board, and 3 of them don't even really win the game, right?
I imagine that we're going to take Horn of the Ancients almost always. I imagine that's going to be taken a lot of
the
time.
Really? I don't think so. I think you're taking the weapon, or maybe you're playing the 1-mana spell. The Colossal, I mean, 3-mana generate a Colossal. So for 4-mana, you play a Colossal, and then you get the Warrior one, and then you're very, very upset, right? I don't even think that's that good. I don't think Horde of Ancients is even that good.
I don't think Queen Azshara is that good.
Yeah, I just don't think this card is good. The weapon, maybe. For the weapon, maybe there's something there. It's 10 damage. You're basically spending 7 mana for 10 damage, which could be okay. But yeah, I don't think Azshara... I think Azshara is kind of... seems a little underwhelming. Unless there's something that we don't know that you can do, maybe with some of these. I think Ring of Tides would have... Like, if it was like Shadow, like Reflection, Ring of Tides, you could do something with it. That's really good. And maybe it's still worth doing. Maybe you just save up Azshara and just get the Ring of Tides and then do some sort of combo. But that's optimistic.
Yeah. We do have a couple neutrals that are pretty powerful, though, that I want to talk about Amalgam of the Deep. The 2-mana, 2/3, epic Battlecry. It has all minion types. Battlecry, choose a friendly minion. Discover a minion of the same minion type.
Yeah, this card is good. This card is going to see play 100%. There's no way this card doesn't see play. Like, if any sort of tribal deck, like Mech Paladin, if Mech Paladin is viable, it's going to want to run this.
Yeah. It's worth noting, it cannot target minions without a minion type. So if you play this on turn 2, you're obviously not going to get anything unless you have a really strong 1-drop. Like, there's the Shaman 1-mana 1/2 Murloc that drops a 1/1 Murloc. If you have that on turn 1, you're always getting a Murloc on turn 2. And
sure.
Pirate Warrior, it's obviously going to play this. Pirate Rogue is going to depend on something like this as well.
Yeah.
100%. I think this card, if there's any sort of deck that you want tribal synergy in, you're going to want to run Amalgam of the Deep. It's just way too versatile. You can play it on turn two. You don't even get anything, even without Discover. But at any point later in the game, it's just decent reload. And for Rogue, it's valuable. Mech Paladin, Pirate Warrior, Naga, whatever. You're probably going to want this. I mean, it's a good filler card. It's not going to be the best card in the deck, but it's going to see play. But the card that's, I think, most interesting out of the neutrals is Naga Giant, which is a 20 mana 8/8. Costs one less for each mana you've spent on spells this game.
Can I tell you how much I love this provision? Because all the previous giants or payoffs for counted number of spells, this makes you pay mana to get your discounts. Is you don't get to skip cost, you get to gain a benefit after you pay. You get the mail-in rebate.
You need to invest.
Yeah.
You need to invest.
You need to pay mana at some point. Because if you don't pay mana, you don't get your discounts.
You don't raise dead tour guide tap and your flesh giant's gonna cost nothing very quickly after.
Or you don't get to play an arcane giant in rogue and pay nothing, and then get an 8/8. You don't get rewarded for that.
Yeah, prep, shadow step, stuff like that. And yeah. So this is basically pseudo arcane giant, but you actually need to spend mana activating a significant amount. In fact, this cannot drop to the board at zero cost before realistically turn six. You need to spend mana on spells every single turn. If you do that every single turn until turn six, then turn six you can spend 5 mana and Naga Giant's going to cost 0. I think that's very, very reasonable. And most of the time, if you're playing a dedicated spell deck, this is going to come down for nothing around turn 7, which I think is fair, is around the time where this thing should be allowed. Unless you're playing Druid and maybe you ramp a bit and get more mana to spend, maybe you drop Naga Giant a little bit earlier, but realistically, it's not happening before turn 6, which I think is fine. But the fact that it seems more fair doesn't mean that it's not going to see play, because it still seems like a good card to play in some decks, especially Druid. Think about the new 7 mana spell.
Scale.
There's scale. There's miracle growth, right? So in Druid, I see a lot of potential. It's a big swing, right? You spend mana on spells early in the game. You play miracle growth, potentially draw Naga Giant, drop it alongside the big threat, the big taunt that you've developed with miracle growth, pretty good. Or you're playing scales on 7, you're stabilizing, removing the opponent's board, dropping a Naga Giant alongside it, big swing. I very much like it in Druid. I think it's got great potential in that specific class, but also maybe in Mage. A Spell Mage deck with Refreshing Spring Water could potentially... Right? You're spending 5 mana and you're resetting. You get more 5 mana to spend. Let's assume you're not drawing the Naga Giant with the Spring Water. You're playing spell heavy deck with Naga Giant. Can work as well.
It could work with Princess Felician Priest, because you don't get 10 mana, you get 5 mana twice. But if you get 5 mana for spells, you play a bunch of spells, then you refresh them, you play a bunch more spells, then your Naga Giant's coming down pretty fast.
Here, you were looking for a usage of Valish and you found it yourself.
There we go.
Having mana is powerful. And with Handmaiden and Switcheroo, I guess Switcheroo, are we upset if we Switcheroo and draw Valish and Naga Giant and have a 0 mana 8/8 Valish? I don't think you're
listen,
that.
I just want a 0 mana 8/8. If I get that now or later, either is fine, but now is better.
Yeah, there's some stuff that can be done with Naga Giant. I'm pretty sure it's going to see play pretty good. And other neutrals, let me conclude, say how much I appreciate the fact that we've repurposed the dormant keyword and into these dive minions. And now we have dormant for one turn, rather the imprisoned minions from Ashes of Outland. I like it a lot. First of all, it's good because if there's a keyword that's popular that people really like, then Team 5 are not limited into not revisiting it in the future. I see no reason why you shouldn't revisit keywords in the future, especially if they're successful and loved, like, I don't know, Tradable, for example, like Discover that they've done in the past. I think that it's fine to have keywords for a specific expansion. I understand the reasoning for that, but sometimes you can revisit things and try them again, because why would you limit yourself? You came up with a good idea. Why just forget about it and never do it again? So,
Zach, I'm going to blow your mind. Do you know how many cents the Dormant has been in? I count 6. I think it's maybe 7.
Really? Is it that? Yeah, but it was always Dormant for 2 turns, right?
It's so, no. Like, it was always Dormant until a condition. Sharazin, the Darkness, Archdruid Nerilex was 2 turns, Flightmaster Dungar was 2 turns. Those are 4 cards in 4 different sets. The Darkness was Dormant in Kobolds and Catacombs.
Yeah, but now you have, like, a new family of Dormant minions, right?
So, Ashes of Outland is the imprisoned set where we think of Dormant, but it's been a one-off mechanic in, I think, 4 or 5 sets. And it's a core part of Hearthstone. I do love this implementation. Dormant for 1 turn is really interesting, but there are a lot of Dormant for 2 turn cards. But there are also a lot of conditional Dormant cards. So Sharazin was Un'Goro, Darkness was Kobolds.
Yeah, I mean, the mechanic existed. But I'm just saying that if there's a keyword that you've made in an expansion or you've designed in the past, and this keyword can also work well in another expansion, then why not do it? Just do it. This is what they've done.
They agree with you. They printed 3 Dormant cards in Stormwind.
Yeah.
There was Dungar, Stockade's Prisoner, and the Rat King.
Let me just say, though, that Gangplank Diver, which is a 5-mana 6/4 that's Dormant for 1 turn, with Rush and Immune while attacking, you can play this on 5 and then Smite on 6.
And it's a 12. Pirate, by the way. It's a pirate.
Yes, that's what I mean. It's a pirate, which is why if you play Mr. Smite, this has charge. So, for example, let's say we're playing, I don't know, Paladin, and we play the Garden's Grace, the 10-mana spell that gets reduced by every mana that you've spent on spell this game, and it's a 5/5 buff, then this is some burst damage. This could be a win condition for Paladin. So, interesting.
Could be.
Yep.
This is a fascinating looking set, and really the Un'Goro vibes just keep getting more and more the more I think about it. I'm very excited for this rotation because we're losing a lot of impactful cards and there are a lot of really interesting things being printed here. I'm not super high on the Naga mechanic because it feels as restrictive as the original Un'Goro elemental mechanic. Instead of playing elemental the previous turn, it's you have to have cards in hand and then you have to like kind of have this alternation and rhythm of spells and minions. I hope it works better in practice than I feel like it does in theory. But either way, there are a lot of really cool things going on here. Really interesting ideas being explored.
Yeah, I really like the Shaman set so far, what's shaping up to be the preset. I really like some of the other cards and other classes. My main concern is that Rogue seems boring, at least on the surface. Like, a hook to Scrog Duck is gonna get old fast if that's all that the class is taking, especially since rotation is taking a lot from this class. So I'm hoping to see different stuff that aren't as one-dimensional. I'm hoping we don't see just 5 more pirates for Rogue.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that Mage isn't all mechs either, because I really want Mage to be somewhat dynamic and interesting without having to be all spells or no spells.
Yeah, but I am concerned with the Mage set as well.
Yeah,
and, but a lot of it also depends on Mech Warper. What's happening with that card? Is it going into core or not?
No. No. Wait, is there some discussion of the idea that they might, after they've said in interviews and talked to a bunch of people about how global mana reduction is a bad idea, the idea of Mech Warper being in core? I don't think that there's a chance in hell.
Why not, Adam? Why not? Just go back on everything you've ever said.
I'm going to go ahead and bet that that's a no on Mech Warper because I'm looking at the Paladin cards right now. That's a no on Mech Warper.
You think so? You think Radar Detector into Mech Warper and a bunch of mechs is not okay? You don't think that's okay? I think that's fine.
Don't forget we got the 2-mana 2/2 with put a mech on top and give it +2/+2 or whatever the size
of that mech is. Yeah. I'm aware. That seems pretty good with Mech Warper too. Yeah. Seems like a good way to win games.
Be a good turn 3 of a 2/3, a 2/2 and buff the top card of your deck by +2/+2 seems all right. Also the Colossal Paladin Minion's a mech. Yeah, I'm not seeing Mech Warper here.
But remember the Gallon said that if they're going to do cost reduction, it's going to be limited to stuff. Things like he mentioned specifically Granite Forgeborn as a cost reduction card. That was an elemental cost reduction card. And Mech Warper is the mech cost reduction card. So actually, in fact, Hat, that putting Mech Warper in core is not going back on anything they've said. They've said a global indiscriminate mana reduction where you discount everything and not a tribal, a specific tribe, or a specific spell school, which they're doing also with the Shaman Legendary, reducing the cost of nature spell. I think Mech Warper might be in core. Actually, I think it wouldn't be contradictory to what they've said. So I'm going to call it now, Mech Warper's in core. Let's go.
I will split the difference with you, Zach. I could see Galvanizer in core. I could see Galvanizer.
No, Mech Warper. Let's go. 2-mana, 2-3.
I'll bet you 2 packs right now.
No, it's not a bat hat.
I'll bet you right now. I'll bet you this exact moment if you take it. You want to take the bet?
It's 2 packs, hat. It's a lot of packs. It's not one. It's 2. Which is the cost of Mech Warper, by the way.
Which is also the cost of any minion after you've done Fires of Zinajari, minus Vandar.
And
by the
Vandar,
way,
yeah. Can we tutor a minion? Is there a tutor minion? Oh, we can Talon. Hat. That's it. That's what we're doing. We're Talon. We're playing.
So
it's perfect. We're playing Talon on 5. It draws us Vandar, and turn 6 Vandar Fires of Zinajari. It's perfect. We're doing it. It's getting done.
Is it not
better than Kazakasan? I mean, be real now. Kazakasan is like turn 8. We don't even have ramp. It sucks. It's not good. We got to trust Fires of Zinajari. Let's go.
We want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in this week and every week. And thank you so much for listening. We're going to call it there. And all of you VS Gold and VS Silver members, thank you so much for supporting us. All of you Patreon members, thank you so much. Special thanks to anyone that upped their sub or supported this week. You can look forward to the next report next Thursday the 34th, the last report of the Alterac Valley expansion. We will have a podcast next weekend. Then after that, the following week, we're not sure what we're going to do exactly yet. In the theory crafting section, what the podcast can look like, we're going to try and get some articles going. But you can expect one more report out of us before this expansion comes to a close. Thank you so much to Evil Dave for the podcast summaries over on Reddit. And Steven Sensei, thank you so much to the intro and outro. Zach, any final thoughts?
We're doing it, Hat. Fires of Zinajari. 4 out of 4 card.
Yeah.
Best card in the set.
5 out of 5.
5 out of 4. Best card in the set by far. We're playing Kern for 2 mana. We're playing Kern for 2 mana. That's it.
I'm very excited for this. All right. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. And we'll talk to you soon.
The Data Reaper podcast is an official production of Vicious Syndicate. Don't forget to sign up and contribute your game data to improve the quality of the weekly Data Reaper report. Instructions are available on our website, along with lots of other weekly content at vicioussyndicate.com. Thank you to all of our patrons and data contributors for proving there's strength in numbers.